The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Thursday, and looking at the aftermath of the tax bill signed into law. What a disaster. Probably one of the worst tax bills, if not the worst tax bill, certainly of the last 100 years. Completely does away with probably 3/4 of what the president promised all of us on the campaign trail. I remember that one time when he said, any American earning $50,000 or less a year will no longer pay any tax. I heard that. I'm sure many of you did as well. I've reported it several times. So, okay. Trump promised a massive 39% tax cut for America's middle class. Make that 35% for the middle class, what's left of it, of America. But the final tax bill lowers taxes for middle-income earners by about 10%. That's it, not 35%. And only for 8 years. They're all set to expire in 2025. There will also be in this bill a major, significant major tax cut for the ultra-wealthy. And individual income rates will not be simplified and are higher than promised. So it's just lie, lie, lie. It's same old, same old. Remember the remark that Trump made at a dinner? I think it was at Mar-a-Lago among his elite wealthy friends. He said, you people just got a whole lot richer. Well, I'm tired of it all. Maybe someone who is not quite as tired of it all as I am is Devi Kidd, but she's pretty damn tired of it. Hello, Devi. Welcome.
Hi.
How are you, Kidd?
Fine. Trying to stay warm.
Yeah. Well, Texas has its extremes. We are back on the West Coast to the artificial drought scenario. Last winter, we had normal, plentiful rainfall for the first time in quite a few years. Well, that high pressure has been erected once again out here, and no rain, little drizzle once in a while, but that's it. So we've lost November's rain. We've lost December's rains. Now we're into January. We might get some later on in January. But looking at the month ahead, it shows about 4 or 5 days of what is being called at this point during January as drizzle. So we're getting screwed again out here.
Well, we must have caught what was, you know, the dip, because up in Minnesota and places like that, it is just beyond. I mean, yeah. I was talking to a friend of mine in Missouri this morning, and he said it was -1 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
So the last couple of nights, it's been 20 and 21 degrees during the night and, you know, 31 during the day. And Today, I think we got up to 35. It's supposed to be a little warmer tomorrow, but we're still...
That's cold.
We're still... Yes, we're still cold.
Well, that's the Polar Express. That's the big dip. Yeah.
But as far as the tax reform, there are several prongs to this fork, and they're all interconnected. But, of course, the big one...
Yeah, we got forked again is what happened.
Well... The big one is, of course, that this continues to cover up the lie that domestic Americans are required to file federal income taxes on income. It is a lie. It has always been a lie since 1913.
Right.
The federal prisons have filled up with people who are correct. You remember the late Tommy Crier, my
sure.
dear friend.
Sure.
Tommy was an attorney for almost 40 years. He was charged with two counts of tax evasion and two counts of willful failure to file over in Shreveport. And because he was such an incredibly brilliant attorney, he got him to drop the tax evasion, but they indicted him. He went on trial for willful failure to file. Now, in federal court, because the U.S. prosecutors are in collusion with the judges, oh, they are, you're not allowed to bring in any information or facts or evidence that can prove your innocence when it comes to the income tax. But thankfully,
what?
Tommy had...
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. If there are real reasons for not filing, you pay the penalty.
Care.
You pay the penalty, the interest... And you file as soon as you're able, correct?
You're not allowed in fit. Yeah, you can do that. You can do a compromise thing like that, but you cannot come into federal court and say that I am a domestic American and I'm not required to file the return, because the first thing that the federal prosecutors do is they say, this has already been settled by the courts repeatedly, Your Honor, and so shut up. And that's it. In Tommy's case, the jury was able to see that this was a bunch of hooey, and they unanimously acquitted him. However, when you're acquitted, as in Tommy's case, the government comes after you in civil court. Okay? Now, they hounded Tommy into his third heart attack, which killed him on June 4th of 2012. But before he died, Tommy wrote the memorandum. It's 109 pages long, and anybody who takes the time to read it and cross-check his facts will understand without any shred of legal complications that you and I and most of your listening audiences who fall in the category of a domestic American are not required to file those tax returns. So, this tax reform is nothing more than to cover up the real truth about those taxes, that 100% of all federal income taxes on the personal end, 100%, go to interest on the congressionally created so-called national
also
debt.
Also illegal, yeah.
And all the rest goes to transfer payments to foreign banking entities like the International Monetary Fund, the Bank of International Settlements, the World Bank.
Mm-hmm.
Not a penny of personal federal income tax funds a single function to the federal government. So when you're talking about tax reform, this is all bullshit, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because all of the money goes away and the government is left trying to fund this mm-hmm. monstrous mm-hmm. behemoth nightmare they call a government by corporate taxes, excise taxes like cigarettes, alcohol, tobacco, firearms, tires, etc., military hardware sales, etc. Okay, so when we understand the truth, then we can get to the tax reform. Now, on the upside, because you and I both want every American to be able to find a job, this tax reform has prompted companies like Comcast. They gave $1,000 bonuses to more than 100,000 of their non-executive employees. Kansas City Southern, Missouri-based transportation, they gave a one-time $1,000 bonus to non-executive. B of A,
mm-hmm. right.
There's a whole long list. of companies, you know, and this is a blessing. It really is. One of the bad things that remained in the bill, if I can get this to work. Okay. And this is in the final bill that went to Trump's desk. It includes a provision, not that part. This allow the IRS will continue to allow illegal aliens to file taxes using something called taxpayers identification number so that they can get that lucrative child tax credit, which is refundable. Illegal aliens.
Wow. Did Tommy not pay on the basis of merit and issue, trying to
Tommy
stand
did
on...
Not, Tommy did not pay because he... Tommy, he knew most of these U.S. prosecutors, okay? And he told them, you know, here's my memorandum, read it. You guys know that I'm not required to file or pay these taxes. About 2 weeks, well, maybe not even 2 weeks before he died, he and I had lunch in Austin. We were there on the smart meter issue because he was our attorney at the time.
Yeah.
And he told me, I'm telling you right now, DV, I have sat across from these U.S. prosecutors and they know that I'm right. He said, but they need victims to stay in business and they sure as hell are not going to jeopardize their paychecks.
Wow. Well, yeah, you got that right. Irwin Schiff had it right, too, and Irwin died in prison.
Irwin didn't just die. Irwin Schiff was chained to a damn cot.
Oh, no.
In a prison.
That I didn't know.
Infirmary. His request to die at home was denied.
Mm.
And yet, and I pointed this out in my book, Taking Politics Out of Solutions, another guy who murdered somebody, he got cancer and he was really sick.
Yeah.
The government allowed him to go home and die at home. But Irwin Schiff died alone, chained to a cot in a prison infirmary.
This is true. Gary Holland told me this story. He knew Irwin, too. This is America, okay? This is what our alleged leadership has done to this country. I'm really sick every time I think about Irwin.
Yes, well, but going back to this. Okay, so on one hand, we have a lot... the American people are... they're grasping at any life raft that gets thrown their way, even though they understand nothing on the issue, okay? They're desperate, and so what are they out there doing? The American people spent $800 billion... I had to double check my number yesterday because I was on the phone with somebody and I forget who it was because I had a bunch of phone calls yesterday. Are you sure it was billion, DV? I said, wait, let me bring it up. Maybe it could be million. No, $800 billion the American people spent on Christmas. Why? Because they are going to get these tax breaks. They're going to, quote, see more money in their pay folder. But these clever Republicans, and of course the Democrats didn't vote for it, but as you said earlier, these tax cuts expire in 2025. Now, what is going to happen in 8 years? Something's going on where they don't want to make it permanent because the corporate tax cuts are permanent in the bill. Okay. Now, the people who thought they were going to get some relief by getting rid of the Obamacare mandate, because now, you know, we're, what, 8, 9 years, let's see, 2008, 18, almost 10 years into it. The IRS is getting, what, $400 or $500 to fine you if you don't sign up. Okay? But that does not take effect. The Obamacare mandate closure does not take effect until 2019. So all of those millions of Americans are going to get screwed again next year. So for everybody jump, I mean, it does finally kill it. But next year, look out if you don't sign up under Obama. I'm so grateful to God that I have not been affected by Obamacare. You know, I had medical through the military until 65, when this corrupt criminal syndicate in Washington forced me into Medicare. I paid my own premiums, but they forced me into Medicare at age 65, a system that's $81 trillion in debt. And so my military medical rolled over into TRICARE for life. So now I don't even pay a copay. I don't pay for prescription. I don't pay for anything. So I have never been affected by Obamacare, and I'm very grateful that I haven't. But I feel very, very badly, you know, for people who do. So while they've, you know, doubled this in there and doubled that, you know, as far as deductibles, this, that, and the other, the underlying problem with this, and as far, and let me back up before I get to that.
Sure.
The tax cuts for the wealthy, I am all for it, and I'll tell you why. Because it's the wealthy who create jobs.
Always has been.
Okay, so why do you want to penalize people who have worked hard and employ 25,000 people?
As long as they're Americans, I got no problem with that.
Yeah, so why do we want to penalize them simply because they're successful? Why? Because it's a mantra that's been drowned and beat into people's heads. It is nothing but stupid class warfare.
Oh, yeah. Rich people are always evil, of course.
The rich people are always evil. And, you know, some of these big mega corporations like Facebook and stuff, I consider to be quite evil, as Amazon, you know, because of Jeff Bezos. The guy makes me puke.
Yep.
But when you're talking about tax cuts for the rich, how do you define rich? Let's say a man who's, you know, or a woman who opened a dry cleaners, you know, in the Permian Basin where I live 25 years ago, and now he's got 15 locations and he employs, you know, 300 people, and he probably takes home $1 million a year. So why do we want to penalize him? Why? There's something in the Constitution, it's called equal protection under the law. And you just can't, that was one of the problems, and Larry Becraft made such a great argument for this under Obamacare, that you had a small percentage of the population that you're going to turn around and penalize the rest of the population for a problem that affects a small number of the population by violating the Constitution. So this business about, you know, oh, well, you got tax cuts for the rich. Good, because that may be the one company that gives you a job. They're going to expand.
It's not going to be the poor people, is it?
The poor people don't create jobs.
No.
And the backbone of America's workforce is small to medium-sized businesses.
Yeah, it used to be.
But they're getting a tax break, too, and it's permanent. So that's very good. But the bad part about this is it still does not address the underlying issue of our monetary system. And you have a column posted, U.S. on the path to fascism, on the verge of collapse, and it's an interview former Congressman Ron Paul. And he makes a good point down here where he says, oh, gosh.
Take your time.
My computer. Right. It's my computer.
Oh, I know. My screen sometimes will not respond either. It jumps around and it's crazy.
Well,
if I'm trying to read something, it messes up.
Well, he believes that, as I do, that we have this mountain that's bigger than any mountain range on the globe of heaps of debt, inflation. Okay, and that's what happened in the Soviet Union in 1989 when it collapses. And he says, quote, "I'm just hoping our system comes apart as gracefully as the Soviet system did." You know, a lot of people think that the Soviet Union collapsed because Ronald Reagan stood at the, some wall and said, take down that wall, Mr. Gorbachev.
I mean, that's not what did it?
No.
I thought he did.
No.
Huh?
No, it had absolutely nothing to do with that. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Edwin Vieira wrote a very good column about that, you know, trying to correct people's understanding of the problem with the monetary system. And that is, you know, we're on, as Ron Paul says, he says, the country's feeling a lot better, but it's all on borrowed money, and that the whole system is an illusion built on corporate, personal, and governmental debt. It's a bubble economy in many different ways, and it's going to come unglued. And he's right, because what did I just get done explaining? That since not a penny of your federal income tax funds a single function of the federal government, what does the government use?
It's amazing.
Well,
yeah, good question.
They use the corporate taxes, the excise taxes,
right.
Military hardware sales. But that's not enough. And so you have a deficit. And that, to meet that deficit, they call up the candy store called the Fed. And the Fed prints up some more bucks, our money, and then charges us the interest on our own money. So, I mean, the Federal Reserve creates inflation, deflation, stagnation. If it wasn't for the magical money machine, we wouldn't be in Afghanistan for 16 years. We wouldn't have been in Iraq and did what we did. Without the magical money machine,
right,
it would not
be
possible.
That's right, 100% right.
The U.S. empire building in all of these countries, forget nation building. They're trying to build an empire to be on the cutting edge at the top of this new world order. But without the magical money machine, the Fed, none of it would have been possible. And just think how much better it would be that we don't have these savages, ISIS and the rest of these Muslims coming after us here in our own country. But Congressman Ron Paul is right. The system is built on an illusion because it's debt. Debt. There's a guy named, let's see, you want to take the, are we going to the break first?
Yeah, pretty quick. Tell people about your book. It's on the homepage at Rents. It's also at...
Yeah, well, my booklet, Why a Bankrupt America.
Best $5 you can spend. Fascinating information. But
it's what every employer should be handing out to their employees.
They should.
You know, I got a letter the other day from a guy who bought 25 of them last month, and he gave them out to his employees. And the employees came back and said, oh, my God,
yeah.
I had no idea. I thought the Federal Reserve was part of the government. Well, no wonder. Nobody knows.
It's amazing. We know it so well, but the average person doesn't
know. Well, millions
of
Americans do. But
yeah.
10 times those millions don't.
Nope.
And
no.
That's why I did my Bankrupt America and brought it up to 2017, is to get the truth out to the American people
right. So
that they don't go on this crazy spending binge, which they're going on right now. I mean, you know, my house is for sale. And since last Thursday, the day before Trump signed the reform bill, real estate here in this area has been dead in 2017. I mean dead. All of a sudden, the number of hits on sites like Zillow.com, which is the biggest one there is on real estate for houses, the hits on my house have doubled and tripled. Because now people are saying, wow, I'm going to have more money
there's a lot of psychology involved here, and that's one instant manifestation of it for sure. Hold on. We have to take a break. We will do that and come right back. Okay, back to Dee Dee. All right. So amongst the darkness of this tax reform are some good things, which I've read about. They're not going to turn the economy around like I think everybody would like to see, because of the simple fact of the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. We just can't. We're in bondage to these people. We'll never get out of it. So this sleight of hand economic funding of all the government benefits and services is going to have to continue. As long as we're indentured to the Federal Reserve and the international banking cartel, we're toast. I don't know how else to look at it.
Well, and the other thing, too, is that people, the American people, are so distracted, Jeff, that they either have their faces glued to these damn electronic gadgets, or the latest sale, or the best makeup, or whatever the hell, you know, they have no thought, the majority of the American people. Now, certainly there's a sector of the American people like us who do pay attention to things. And this is an article. I hope you let me read a few things out of it.
Sure, go ahead.
It's from a former Reagan White House budget director. His name's David Stockman. He's very, very smart. But this is the part that the American people are not familiar with. They don't care about because they don't understand it. And Stockman says, I don't think we're going to have a liquidity crisis. I think it's going to be a value reset. I think there's going to be a jarring downward price adjustment in both the stock market and the bond market. This phantom or phony wealth that's been created since the last crisis is basically going to evaporate. And what he's talking about is the record high stock and bond prices. And these are big red flags going off for people like us. And, you know, he says that the crazy Bitcoin mania has drained off what would otherwise be a demand for gold. And when Bitcoin collapses spectacularly, which it will because it's sheer mania in the markets right now, then people are probably going to go back to gold. But what important, he says, is about the tax cuts. Stockman says, I think it's going to be a fiscal calamity of biblical proportions. I want to be clear. I'm always for tax cuts and shrinking the size of government, but you have to earn it. You have to cut spending and entitlements and this massive defense budget. Obviously, they didn't do that. If you look at honest accounting, this bill will add $2.5 trillion to the public debt, which, and this is a key point, is already going to rise by $10 trillion over the next decade based on the current laws and taxes. More importantly, the central banks, and that would be the Fed, realize they cannot keep printing money at these crazy rates, and by that I mean bond buying. Now they're going to begin to normalize and shrink their balance sheet. By the fall of 2018, the Federal Reserve will be shrinking their balance sheet by $600 billion a year. What that means in plain simple English is that they, the Fed, are dumping $600 billion a year of existing bonds into the market, just as Uncle Sam will be attempting to borrow $1.25 trillion more. Now, if you don't think this is a financial collision waiting to happen, then I'm not sure what it would be.
Uh-huh.
We are heading for a thundering collision in the bond market that will drive yields upward far more than the market is expecting. And he talks about the illusion of low interest rates. And he says when the interest rates start to rise, everything is going to come apart because cheap debt has been priced in forever and we are headed for more expensive debt. So this is what, you know, sadly, the American people don't understand, just like what happened. You know, back in 2005, Edwin started writing about the banking crisis. And that was one of the first columns he wrote for News with Views. And my dear friend who passed away in November of 2013, Harvey Gordon, who was one of the funniest people I ever knew, he was Jewish. And he used to say, tell them to keep their nose out of everybody's business. But he was the sweetest man. But Harvey told me in 2005, you know, are you and John going, because when my late husband was still alive, are you guys going to stay in Sacramento? And I said, no, or California. I said, no. And he said, sell your house now. Get out now. I'm telling you right now, the housing market's going to crash by 2007, 2008.
Yeah, I remember this story.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And Harvey was right. We got out by the skin of our teeth with a profit from our house. But Americans who are not watching because they don't understand these things like the bond markets and yields on money, the fiat currency that we're forced to use, what happens when the central bank, you know, flutters the country with all of this fake money that we're forced to use. And when Stockman talks about this financial collision waiting to happen, it is. It's going to be a thundering collision in the bond market, and money's going to become expensive. And what's going to happen to the housing market? It's not going to be this free-for-all like people are thinking. You know, and he says that stock prices are going to collapse big time when the underlying predicate of cheap debt, massive stock buybacks and M&A deals and everything else supporting the market today finally reverses. Right. So we're going to have deflation in the canyons of Wall Street, and that will not be a happy day. So because the problem was never solved in 2008, these mental midgets in the Congress,
that's the one,
were faced with July of 2008.
Mm-hmm.
They literally pooped their pants in panic because most of them do not understand the problem and disabilities of our monetary system. So what did they all do? They turned around and they threw debt. They threw tons of billions and billions and billions of dollars to the banks and Chrysler, which is unconstitutional, as well as the banks. So they threw these buckets of billions at the banks to keep the whole thing from collapsing. But it was like putting a Band-Aid on a patient on the operating table who's hemorrhaging from a foot-long gash down the front of their body. And so here we are again, down the road. And when money gets more expensive and inflation starts to rise, the Federal Reserve will knee-jerk again. And like he said in his article, this is a collision that is just waiting to happen. And the other thing, when he talks about shrinking the size of government, there has been no shrinking the size of government in my lifetime.
Ever. No.
Now,
probably never.
Well, Trump has done a very good job on the regulations end of it. He has remarkably gotten rid of a ton of unnecessary regulations that have saved American businesses and corporations, not all businesses or corporations, billions of dollars. So this is very good what he's been able to do. But these agencies and cabinets that were created by Congress can only be dissolved by Congress.
Uh-huh.
The Federal Department of Education sucking down $66 billion last year, all borrowed. The EPA. Every state of the union has its own EPA. There is no need for a federal environmental protection agency, but we know that it is crucial to the world government to collapse capitalism using an environmental crisis. So we have this other version of the Gestapo out there. The foreign aid. There is nothing in the Constitution that authorizes that. There is so much that can be eliminated to return to a limited form of Republican government so that the government can operate on corporate excise taxes and tariffs in the trade sector without ever taxing the American people. But it hasn't been done. All we hear during the two-year sessions with this criminal syndicate in Washington is, oh, it's a budget fight. Well, wait a minute. Let's break down the budget. You have no legal authority to be funding the Federal Department of Education or the EPA or foreign aid or the Small Business Administration or USAID, the United States Aid for International Development. You have no constitutional authority to fund the HHS, Health and Human Services,
yeah.
Which is sucking out $1.3 trillion this year, borrowed. It's all borrowed debt. Mm-hmm. And that's what people like Stockman are talking about that the American people are not talking about, because people like Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham and the people on the left who have their hand in your wallet, they don't talk about any of this. And so the American people remain ignorant. And they're not learning it in school. You know, I'm a part-time substitute teacher.
I do know that.
Well, the week before Christmas break...
I've heard enough horror stories for the next 2 years. Thank you.
Well, but this is a good example. This is a 10th grade social studies class. And in the... they were taking a test. I gave them a test. While they were doing that, I didn't have anything else to do, so I grabbed the big textbook that weighs about 11 pounds, and I'm not kidding. This book is so thick. So I flipped it open to the part about Thomas Paine,
mm-hmm.
and it was talking about the subject of my article, my last column that I sent you. Thomas Paine wrote The American Crisis. It was published December 19, 1776. But in this school textbook, it said that, and we know that George Washington, they were forced to the other side of the Delaware River on Christmas Eve, and the British were on the march, and Washington knew morale was so bad, they didn't even have shoes. Their feet were wrapped in the snow, in rags and everything else. But long story short, according to the school textbook, Washington ordered Thomas Paine's The American Crisis to be read by the officers up and down to the troops up and down the river,
uh-huh.
to build a morale, because it's a truly a remarkable piece of writing for back then. But it's not true. There is no proof anywhere, not in the the Library of Congress, not in the anywhere can it be found, even in Thomas Paine's own writings, that that at that time Washington gave the order to read, and Thomas Paine was with him at the time, so he would know. So I'm reading this and I'm going,
that's very interesting.
Lie.
I didn't know that.
Here's a lie. Yeah. Uh huh. Yeah. Yeah. It's a very important story. What Thomas Paine wrote. My column I sent you is called The American Crisis Then and Now.
Uh-huh.
Because Thomas Paine's The American Crisis was actually, I think, seven parts. But I only used part one in my column. Because what he said then is where we are now. And it is just amazing how we went from that victory to where we are today.
Mm-hmm.
But since we are here today, and we have this volcano boiling away, I just, would like to caution people, the listeners, and tell your friends and your family to be careful, about what's going on. Yes, it's wonderful that many jobs are being created. We want as many people to get back into the workforce as possible. And let me deviate for just a second. When you get rid of these, federal agency cabinets, they can't do it overnight. They have to phase it out. It would take like a year to phase out
sure.
the U.S. Okay,
yeah.
Where would those people go? Well, let's look at the EPA. All the states of the union have employees that work for their environmental agencies in every state. And so through attrition, you have people who retire, so they hire. They need to have more of this, so they hire.
Right.
A lot of them, these federal workers, would get absorbed into the state jobs in their fields, or they simply go out and look for a job, like I did when I became a federal whistleblower in 1989. I filed a fraud, waste, and abuse against my own job at Peterson Air Force Base, Air Force Base Command in Colorado Springs, and I knew I was going to lose my job. But I had to do what my conscience dictated. And when the inspector general investigated my official complaint, he determined that I was right, that my stupid visor, Sandra Brown, who was a GS-12, I was a GS-11.
Right.
She wanted to become a GM-13, which is quite a hike in pay. But in order to do that, she had to supervise one person. So she created a job that didn't exist just so she could jump that pay scale. And when I came from my previous job at a different Army base, I supervised 132 people. So she used, but it was a nightmare for me. And I knew I was going to lose my job, and 9 months later I did. But you just, you know, you just have to follow your conscience. So, yes, some people will not be able to, you know, get absorbed possibly into a state job. But if you manage your money correctly, you know, instead of spending, people are spending. They're not saving like they did in my mother and my grandparents'
day. Americans have the lowest, I think the lowest rate of saving in the Western world.
Well, it's materialism. It's materialism. Yeah. For God's sakes, how many pairs of shoes do you need? You only have 2 feet. You know? Right. I wear the same size clothes as I did when I graduated from high school.
That's a remarkable thing. That doesn't happen very often. Good job.
When I graduated from high school, I weighed 107 pounds. Today, I weigh 111. I've lost some weight lately. But, what do I, how many closets do you need?
Right.
How, you know, I mean, it's stuff.
Oh, it's people, all stuff. It's propagated by reality TV.
I just wish, I understand the importance of a cell phone. I use my cell phone about 3 hours in a year because I only keep it in my SUV in case I have an emergency. But when I drive out to California to visit my mom and my brothers and sisters, I call mother, hi, I'm in New Mexico. Hi, mom, I'm in Arizona. Hi, mom, I'm in Southern California.
Sure.
You know, so that's all I ever use a cell phone. These people in the damn post office, they stand there. Oh, did you see?
Why do they think that that's okay to force people into their personal business?
When their grandchild poops in their diaper.
It doesn't matter. You know? And for them to do that is just another testimonial to how...
And I understand that it's made it easier for business people. But
yeah.
For God's sakes, please sit in your truck or your vehicle and do your cell phone thing there. But at the at school, and I teach at all of the schools in the district, but especially in the junior and senior high, they come into the classroom with the earbuds in, looking down.
Wow.
When the bell rings, they're at the door. They've already got the earbuds back in because cell phones are not iPhones. None of those are allowed in the classrooms at all. But when they're walking down the hall, they have a 4-minute break between classes. Plugged right back in, and I stand outside the door to greet the students, and that's all you see are kids walking with their
headphones. Actually stand outside the door? Teachers don't do that anymore. You must be the only one.
No,
that doesn't happen very often. That's remarkable. What grade is this again?
Well, the other day at the high school, well, a couple of weeks now, this girl comes by, and she's really cute. She's a 10th grader, and she's really very sweet. And she comes by, and she goes, oh, Mrs. Kidd, are you our sub today? And I said, no. And she pushed her friend a little bit, and she goes, that's Mrs. Kidd. She's the best sub we've ever had.
Oh.
And I said, oh, thank you.
Well, good for you. That's nice. Well, praise doesn't go to teachers very often anymore, even substitutes. Probably especially substitutes, but that's good.
The teachers around here, they do work very hard. I only do it in the afternoons a few hours, but these teachers, boy, they're on the...
Whoops, we lost you. Did we lose Devi? We might have. Let's see if we can get her back. All right. Well, maybe not. Hopefully not. But she does substitute, and she's told me some remarkable stories about these kids. What you just heard is symptomatic, if not...
A lot of problems with
we lost you.
Who
we
teachers
lost you.
Who are undereducated.
We lost you. Are you back?
I don't know, am I?
I think so. I hear you. That's a good sign. We lost you when you were talking about the kids plugging in to go class to class and getting praised as a substitute teacher.
Yeah.
That's all really nice. But the point is here, the addiction, that electronic smartphone addiction, it is irresistible. I don't know anybody who can really break it easily. You'd almost have to go to some kind of a clinic or some rehab. That's a tough one. Boy, that's their whole life now.
Yes,
that
and they start them so young.
Parents buy their kids smartphones when they're 8 and 9 years old and think it's real cute.
It's not just a smartphone. It's these tablet things. The last time I was at my eye doctor, I was sitting there, and this woman, she had two little boys, maybe 4, 5 years old, both of them. They both had those tablets. They were playing this whatever they were, and it was loud, you know, in the waiting room.
Sure.
And they were just sitting there like zombies. And I thought, why don't you read a book to your little boys? Get rid of those damn things. Read to your children.
I know. It's just
kids who read succeed.
Yeah, that's a good bumper sticker. People now just, they're not the same. They just don't read. They don't think. It's all about pace. It's cadence of life. And it's so quick and so fast. Book reading is too slow for most of them. They can't do it. And their parents don't help them. Parents are the same.
I hope your audience reads and they go and get my Why a Bankrupt America.
This audience will. If any audience in talk radio reads,
you can get it on my website, dvy.com, dvy.com. Let's get the truth out there so we can help Americans understand.
That's the idea. We're all here to try to help, assist, make available.
It's only 44 pages. It's, you know, it's very understandable for, you know.
No, it's a classic. It's truly a classic. It is.
Well, it's updated, you know.
Yeah.
It's updated for 2017.
Good job.
For your listening audience, please, everybody, be careful out there New Year's Eve because the drunks love to kill everybody else.
No, don't they?
If you're going out, please be careful. We want to see you. You know, stay around.
Right here and back with us in 2018. Thanks, Stevie.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, Happy New Year to you.
Happy to you as well. Okay,
bye.
All right, there she goes, DV Kit. And her website is dv.com, dvvy.com. Drop by, and that booklet is 44 pages of solid gold wisdom and knowledge. Okay, be right back with hour number 2.